You are listening to the Chef John Podcast. I'm Andrew Scrivani.
And I'm Chef John, the Caesar of this salad.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, John.
Well, hey there, Andrew.
Good to hear your voice. I am really excited for this week's episode. We have so many fun things to talk about. But of course, being a podcast, we have to address certain things in order to keep the lights on. First of all, we wanted to tell everyone, of course, we are available everywhere podcasts are being broadcast. So that's one way to kind of keep the lights on is have people come and listen to the podcast. I'm hoping that we have a continuing parade of people going to our space at the chefjohnpodcast.com. We have some features that we want you to participate in. We would love for you to leave us a voicemail because we will work that into the show. And please remember to give us a 5-star review and leave a comment on the podcast platform of choice. So all of that aimed at keeping us successful and moving forward so that you can get to hear the dulcet tones of Chef John indefinitely.
Yes. And not only is the reviews and the ratings important, but I'm getting a huge kick out of actually reading the reviews, which I hope are sincere, because if they are, I'm very, very touched.
That's great.
And on the other hand, if you're just making them up to make us sound and look good, that works too.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. We're not picky.
We'll take it all.
Thank you, everyone that's taking the time to do that. We appreciate it.
So it's been an interesting couple of weeks. And one of the things that has happened now that the podcast is out there in the world is you start playing it for friends and family who know me personally and then may not know you, John. And I had this experience today in the car. I was playing the show for a couple of young friends of mine. And as soon as your voice came on, they were like, wait a second. I know that guy's voice.
I know that guy.
Like, who is that? And I was like, oh, it's Chef John from Food Wishes. He's like, that guy, you're doing a podcast with that guy? Oh my God. He was like, that guy's famous. Of course, leaving me at the side of the road, like roadkill in that conversation. But foodie fame is a bit niche. I think your niche is a fairly carved out one, a little bit bigger than my own. But today on the show, I want to talk about foodie fame. That's sort of our theme for today. I know you had plenty of experiences with it. I had one recently where I had somebody walk up to me on the street and they were all excited and really in my space, like really up in my grill. And they were like, I know you. You look really familiar. You're that famous YouTuber guy. And I'm like, so close. You got so close.
He has a little more hair than I do.
I think you're mixing me up with my partner. You know, it's always flattering when somebody recognizes you, and I'm sure that happens to you occasionally.
It does, and by voice, not sight, which is always a little freaky, since most quote unquote internet celebrities are recognized by their face. They're on camera,
right,
on their show, and it's like, hey, that's so and so. I get people coming up to me in a restroom going, your voice sounds familiar. Where do I know you from? You know, are you on like a commercial? And I'm like, well, you know what? Let me finish peeing and I'll be right with you. But then I'm like, you're a YouTube fan, right? Like, oh, and then, you know, they make the connection. Yes. Interesting topic. And it actually reminds me of a story. You know, at a certain point, you don't think of yourself that way, despite any amount of success. And the first time I realized I was actually considered what some people would consider a food celebrity in that space was at the Awani Hotel in Yosemite Park, which if anyone's been there, just absolutely glorious piece of property, obviously, just in a valley underneath. What's the famous Half Dome?
Yeah.
Beautiful old hotel. And every winter they would host, it was called the Chef's Holiday. And they would invite chefs from the Bay Area and nationwide, since that's a slow time of year and you can actually get chefs to come and do demos and symposiums and panel discussions, whatever. And it kind of built up almost like a foodie destination. They sold tickets to the public. And at the end of it, the last night of the, I think it was a 3-day event, they would do this gala dinner. So I heard about this. I always wanted to go and never got a chance. And now I'm Joe Food Blogger. And I had gotten into the habit of any cool event I heard about, email the PR people. Hey, I would love to cover your event. That was the golden ticket. Was the words cover. So for folks not familiar, they give you free food and wine. You write a very positive blog post about their event and everybody wins.
So bribery.
Legal, completely ethical, and highly appropriate bribery.
All right.
So anyway, I had gotten pretty good at sending out these emails. I shoot out an email to the PR people at the Iwani. I would love to cover your event. Sounds great. Michelle and I, plus one, link to the videos. I think I was still writing for the American food site for about.com, which was how I actually had in my possession a New York Times press credential, or at least the paperwork that's who signed the checks. So whenever I would apply for a press credential, you have to put your employer. And of course, not surprisingly, New York Times.
Nice.
Totally truthful, probably unethical since I didn't exactly write for the New York Times. Long story short, it worked every time.
Of course it would. There's no reason why it wouldn't work.
No, why wouldn't it? Michelle and I get the reply back. We'd love to have you come cover the event. They send us the itinerary. And we see that a couple people were huge fans of Peg and Sue from Cowgirl Creamery are one of the celebrity foodies there. Apparently, the last night of the event, they had a gala dinner, and every table, like tables of eight people, I believe, got a celebrity to kind of anchor the table. So I thanked them for their invitation. I said, by the way, would love if there's any way possible to get seated at Peggy and Sue's table for this dinner. Big fans, blah, blah, blah. So the person emails back. We'll see what we can do. Shouldn't be a problem. Michelle and I go to this event, have a wonderful time, lots of fun activities, great food, of course, even better wines, surprisingly good beverage service. Come to the last night, we go down to the ballroom to find our table for the gala dinner, brought to our seats, and the rest of the folks gather into their seats. And as you know, I'm an early bird. Mm-hmm. I'm never late for any food or wine events.
No.
I'm like suspiciously early. Like, why is that guy here? Is he part of security?
Well, you get a couple extra drinks that way.
You get an extra drink that way. You get to scope the scene. So we're sitting at our table and it slowly fills in. And I'm not recognizing any foodie celebrities, especially Peggy and Sue from Cowgirl Creamery. So now the table's filled. Lovely people having wonderful conversations about food. I'm, you know, doing my Chef John thing, telling stories, kicking, taking names. All of a sudden, I realized this request we put in earlier did not come to fruition. Definitely not seated at Peg and Sue's table.
Did they hear that Chef John was at the table and decided to be on the other side of the room? Or
I'm not sure how we didn't get seated there. Now I'm debating internally, should I bother anyone? Should we just sit at this table of quote unquote non-food celebrities? We call them in the business nobodies, as you know.
Yes.
It's an affectionate term. At the last second, I'm like, you know what? They did say they could probably do it. So I'm going to try. So I called the floor manager and I said, you know what? Don't want to make a big scene here. But when we talked to so-and-so from PR department, she thought we could get into Peg and Sue's table. And I see them over there. The only problem is the table's clearly full. Just want to make sure it wasn't a mistake. This is our seats. We're good. No big deal. No one said no worries back then, but had they?
The Australians hadn't infiltrated yet.
I would have said that. But anyway, they walk over and I see him chatting with a couple of people at the table and two people stand up, start walking towards our table. So I look at Michelle and she looks at me and we're like, hey, this might work out. The manager comes over and says, yes, sir. Would you like to relocate? These fine folks will take your seats. So we get up and excuse ourselves and say something like, oh, sorry, we were supposed to sit with some friends. You folks seem lovely, but we will be taking our leave now. Enjoy your dinner. And go over, get seated with Peg and Sue, our cheese goddesses, I should say.
You booted some perfectly nice people out of their celebrity moment.
It looked like they asked them and the people seemed to have no issue moving. They probably didn't even know who they were, or at least that's what I tell my conscience. So we sit down and have the best dinner. I mean, we talk cheese like ad nauseum. As a bonus celebrity foodie, we had Tracy Desjardins at our table, a famous San Francisco Bay Area chef. She had cooked one of the courses. We enjoyed a beautiful gnocchi, which, as you know, may be the hardest thing to make for a gala banquet dinner in the history of food. Even for two people, hard to make.
Hard, super hard.
For hundreds of people, impossible to make. And the only reason I say that is that's how good she is. She nailed it. It was like a fantastic gnocchi dish. So we're having like the dream foodie dinner. Peg and Sue, Cargo Creamery, hearing all the stories about how they started. Tracy Desjardins entertaining us. Her guest was another, might have been the sommelier from her restaurant. Just amazing dinner. So dinner ends, we go out to lobby, people are milling about, trading war stories about who was at their table. We're waiting for the elevator and we're chatting with some folks. And basically the common question was, hey, so who's at your table? So we're saying, oh, Tracy Desjardins, Peg and Sue. It was awesome. Best dinner ever. And so I politely say to the people, so who's your foodie celebrity? And they say, you were, except you left after 15 minutes. And I said, are you kidding? He said, no, you, Food Wishes, Chef John from Food Wishes, was the celebrity foodie that was supposed to be at our table. We had no idea until, like, you know, just were going to blow us off for another celebrity foodie, clearly more famous than you are. And so now I'm feeling so terrible because not only did I just brag about how awesome our table was, but they had to tell me how horrible their table is. Apparently the two people that replaced us were total duds, like just wet blankets, weren't even into food, didn't even know why they were there. So not only did they lose their quote unquote celebrity foodie from the table, I was replaced by someone that was like not even into food at all, just happened to be at the hotel that weekend and decided to check out this gala dinner.
If you were a religious man, you would have had to go to confession after this.
Yes, or at least a little bit of self-flagellation or something with a wet noodle. So what added to the awkwardness is in the middle of this conversation of who was at your table and, oh my God, you were supposed to be our food. So now we're in the elevator going up to our room and just stuck like 1 foot away from this person that's just not happy with me at the moment. And they were semi good natured, but you could tell they were not thrilled that we blew them off. So basically one table apparently had double celebrity featured at the table. And
I guess everyone at that table was a celebrity.
And one table got zero food celebrities. And I've thought about that ever since. But that evening was, I think, the first time I'd ever been described that way. Like, I never thought of myself that way. I was a guy that now didn't have to work in restaurants because I had some videos on YouTube and I was, you know, making about the same as in a restaurant. So that's all I knew about the scene. I didn't know this was like going to be a big thing or people cared who you were. But to the PR department at the Iwani Hotel, clearly I qualified as a foodie celebrity. And I'm thinking they were just trying to fill out their tables and satisfy their pledge that everyone would get a foodie celebrity at their table.
You think they might have given you a heads up as to the fact that you were the celebrity at the table?
Well, what I'm thinking is the floor manager who I asked, could we switch tables? I'm thinking that person had no clue who the hell I was.
Got it.
And was just simply like, oh, I'll be floor manager guy. Two people here want to sit over there. I'll simply walk over there, ask two people if they could switch because we have a friend that wants to sit with a friend. So on their end, I could see how that just went totally off the radar. And not until afterward did we realize the damage we had done.
Safe to say you probably weren't welcomed back the following year, were you?
I did not apply with my New York Times press credential, quote unquote. So that was my brush with actual celebrity foodies. And my first experience being described as such. And long story short, left some very disappointed people in my wake.
Such is fame.
Yes. It's a cruel mistress.
So now that we've established that you are a celebrity food blogger and have brushed up against many food celebrities, I guess it becomes confusing at times just how many of these famous people you have either had a meal with or been on a panel with or been out to dinner with. And you're just sort of blending in now in the general jungle of foodie celebrities. And you probably just know them all now, right?
Well, yeah, not so much know them all. I have, and I think we've talked about this before, I have something called face blindness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have.
It's actually a psychological, is that the right term? Condition where even people you're extremely familiar with, you cannot recognize faces. It's like their face is upside down. And until you get a connection, until they say something that triggers it, you will not know who this person is, even though you work with them for 5 years or what. So that adds to this. And then the other thing is because you go to these food shows and these tastings and these tours and what have you, sometimes you're not sure if the person you're recognizing is a fellow quote unquote foodie celebrity or just someone that was at the event. Because I know you've been to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And you actually spend, which is the most fun part about these, you actually spend more time with the attendees than you do with the fellow panelists and demo people and so forth.
Well, I mean, those are the people that are fawning over us. Of course, we need to spend time with them.
Of course, we would be like, all right, who's going to compliment me the most?
It's all about the ego, right? We have to get the ego stroked.
Me and my fragile ego would like to sidle up to you folks for a few minutes.
Yes, please. A large dose of hero worship, please.
Come on, there must be something else nice you could say. So anyway, I was in LA alone. This was a non-Michelle trip. I was down there filming a pilot for a television show that actually did get a pilot, surprisingly did not get picked up.
What was this show called?
Well, some of you hardcore food reality competition fans might remember a short-lived series called Time Machine Chef. The premise was chefs would be put in a time machine and would appear in some era and have to cook a meal, a competition mystery basket type meal, only using the food and equipment and tools, et cetera, from that period of time. Great concept. Chris Constantino was one of the participants. The point is, I'm in LA alone, eating out pretty much every night. After work, I would make my way through the LA restaurant scene. I was staying in Santa Barbara. So the restaurant I was in that night, which was really more of a bar than a restaurant, it's called Father's Office, which was apparently known for their famously delicious burger. And I am a burger, you know what. So if someplace anywhere near me has a fairly famous burger, it's only a matter of time before I'm going to go there. I'm hanging out at the bar. And I don't know about you. When you go to a restaurant alone, do you sit at the bar also?
Quite often, yeah. It's a little weird sitting at a table by yourself.
Yeah.
Especially in a strange city. It's kind of weird.
And besides, I'd rather talk to a bartender, like have them in front of me the whole time than the few seconds you get with the server. Do I sound needy? I don't know. It's like a de facto dining partner. This right. person has to walk by you, at least carrying drinks.
Yeah.
For the duration of your burger. So I order the famous Father's Office burger, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I look across the room to a young woman with another young woman, and they're drinking wine, and I know this woman. And I know this woman is a famous food blogger that I'm 100% convinced I had done either a panel discussion with or some kind of demo or shared a stage somehow, something. And more than just a few minutes. Like a lot of these folks we meet, you know, it's just 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and you recognize the face, but you remember it was a fleeting encounter. This was someone I knew, like knew. So it's driving me crazy. I can't think of her name or which event it was. Is it Aspen? Was it South Beach Food and Wine? As I drop a few names of events I've been
to. Yeah, you are addled by alcohol at all of these places.
Well, yeah, I'd like to use that as an excuse. I think I'm only like a half an IPA in at this point. So I asked the bartender, I said, I'm so sorry, this is going to sound inappropriate. I know this woman across the room and I just cannot think of her name. By any chance, do you know who that is? And he looks over, he says, I do not. I think she's been in a few times, but I don't know her name. And then he says, which kind of surprised me. He says, you know what? I have her credit card at the register. Let me take a peek.
So stalker is everywhere.
So now I'm thinking, wait a minute. I know I asked him, but I'm pretty sure if you're a bartender, you're not supposed to give out the names of people that are in the restaurant based off their credit card that you're holding for them in good faith. But at this point, I'm too far in. So I'm going to be an accomplice now to his
inappropriateness. Yes.
Possibly illegal behavior. So he walks back and he's like, well, her first name is Pavardi. Pavardi Shallow. And I said, yes. So now I'm 95% convinced I knew her before. After hearing the name, I'm like, yes, I've most definitely interacted with a Pavardi at one of these shows. And it's just, I made the mistake of getting the name because now it's really driving me insane. So I said, you know what? I'm going to have to break the tie here and go over and actually find out what the heck her name is or where I know her from now that I know her name. And clearly I know this person. So I wait for them to finish their wines. I have the bartender buy them two drinks. I do the customary wait for the wave and the first sip. And I now finish my burger slowly and unthreateningly make my way across the room.
The least creepy way you could, yes.
Which is impossible for a 48-year-old male alone at a bar in LA with whatever you would consider people's idea of the opposite of a LA haircut fashion situation. So I walk over and they're like, you know, hold it. Oh, thanks for the drink. I said, you know what? I'm not just a random creepy guy buying you guys a drink. Although I'm probably that also. I said, I know you. I know you're a food blogger. I know we were in an event together. The familiarity is like palpable, intense. Put me out of my misery. Was it New York? Was it the New York food? No. South Beach? No. Asma Food and Wine? No. So I'm guessing, and she's just smiling. She has this really, you know, sly look on her face. Finally, her friend, thank God, decides to put me out of my misery and says, are you a fan of reality television? I said, yeah, a little bit. She said, have you ever seen the show Survivor? And as soon as she said that, it just locked in. That was Pavardi, the winner of Survivor. I forget what season. It was early in the run. And they just started laughing. And she was enjoying me thinking she was a food blogger. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. So yes, I do know you. Like X amount of million Americans know you from watching the show for whatever, 13 weeks. And she was really good natured about it.
She said, I was looking over at the bar at you. And when you bought me a drink, I kind of thought you were my CPA.
No, she was like, why is that cab driver drinking? He should have a drink on duty. He's just reminding me the best put down diss one-liner I've ever heard. I was walking by a pool in Las Vegas one time, past some very attractive 20-somethings, and I'm about, I don't know, 5-6 feet away. And I hear one woman say to her friend who called the cab, oh yes, that's a sweet burn.
That's bad.
As a connoisseur of the sweet burns, it was so well-timed and so accurate because seriously, what am I doing at the pool? Why am I there? I shouldn't be there. I should be fully clothed in my room or with the rest of the $2 blackjack table players. You're so self-conscious because you're like, there's no graceful way for a older, middle-aged, single, balding male to buy two late 20-somethings a drink at a bar in LA. They're clearly just accepting your drink to get a drink, which as they should.
Or morbid curiosity.
And you're going to do nothing but probably embarrass yourself. But I did have a legitimate reason. I was just mad with not knowing where the heck I knew this woman from, who I clearly knew like really well. And as it turns out, I did on a certain level. Food blogger was not one of them. She was so not a food blogger. And then she asked me what I did. I kind of told her. And for a brief 2 to 3 month period, she followed me on Twitter, which I was very excited about since I think until Martha Stewart followed me was my biggest celebrity follower, except you.
Well, I'm flattered to be in Martha's company.
I just said that to be nice. Then she probably like read some of my tweets and stopped following me. But yeah, I did know her, just not like that.
So we have a new feature here on the Chef John podcast, and it's one that brings me particular joy because many times I'm sitting with Chef John across the table. I love to bring up things that make Chef John crazy.
Which is not that hard.
So our new feature will be called Things That Make Chef John Crazy. I have an initial one. Italian-Americans, sauce versus gravy.
Oh my God. I'm already annoyed. Not that people think it should be called one thing or the other, but that people actually argue and get mad that you're calling it the wrong thing. Because I assume it's, depending on where you're from and what grandma called it, that's what you call it.
Right.
So someone that was raised calling something gravy or red sauce, like all of a sudden now, 40-something years later, I'm supposed to convince them to call it sauce now? Like, that's not happening. So that's what makes me crazy about these kind of things.
But you do have an opinion on this, right?
Oh, yeah, I certainly do. To me, it's clearly sauce.
Agreed. It is absolutely sauce.
And you know why it's not gravy? Because it's not a sauce made from the rendered fat of meat that has a starch cooked into it and then liquid applied to thicken it. That's a gravy.
Oh, wow. You got all chefy on us.
I did. Should there have been some kind of disclaimer or warning? But if you've ever wondered out there, and by the way, leave us a comment if you have a different definition of gravy and or sauce.
Or if you care about this so much that you're angry with us.
Yes, if you're angry, and we'll try to get you some help. If you cook a pork loin and then you take it out of the pan and you throw some vinegar in the pan to deglaze it and you add a little butter and you pour it over the pork or you slice it or however you're going to want to present it, that's a sauce. But if you take that same pan after you take the pork loin out and you stir some flour into that fat and you cook that into a roux, R-O-U-X, and then you add some flavorful liquid, wine, water, broth, whatever, that's a gravy. All right, classic example, country gravy. You cook your sausage, you cook your bacon, pan full of fat, flour, milk, green onions, whatever, that's a gravy. So culinarily, I think there's a very strict definition of a gravy. So whenever I hear, put some gravy on the lasagna, ravioli with a nice gravy. And of course, you have to do the bad accent.
The obligatory bad Italian.
The cartoon Italian chef. That's a spicy meatball.
You actually look like the cartoon of the Italian chef. So
see, everything I say sounds like that. So that one particular argument drives me crazy, not just because, hey, people, we got better things to do with our lives than argue about this, but it's a fairly specific to me in the culinary world terminology for what a gravy is, what a sauce is, which is usually not my MO. I'm usually fast and loose with the definitions.
Okay.
I would call things a confit in a heartbeat that are not confit because they've been slowly cooked in their own juices or whatever, even though technically that's a thing. Can you call it a sauce or can you call it a gravy? It's like, well, you know how you know? What does the person call it? That's what they should call it.
I will attack this like the teacher that I am. I'm going to give you some facts outside of the facts that you've given us culinarily, which are legitimate, of course. In doing some research on the sauce versus gravy debate, I'm going to give you the primary reason why you should never call it gravy. There is no word for gravy in Italian. The word doesn't exist.
It's not a gravy.
The reason that Italian Americans began calling it gravy was in order to assimilate to American culture, and that anything that had meat in it that was thick and as you described would be called a gravy. So those of you who are calling it gravy, your ancestors wanted to assimilate better. How about that?
Like, there's no way they're going to persecute us if we call their meat sauces gravy.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You were trying too hard, way too thirsty. Your ancestors were way too thirsty about being assimilated into American culture. Those of us who call it sauce. Now, there is a word for that in Italian. Salsa.
Salsa.
So the fact that it actually exists in the Italian language, the fact that it is actually a derivative of the word that actually exists in the Italian language should settle this debate forever. It drives me crazy just the same.
Well, that's nice to know. After this podcast, I will not think of this again until you bring it up at our next gathering. You'll be like, hey, how's the gravy on the ravioli? And I'll be like, hey, what are you, a wise guy?
So, John, what have we learned today?
Well, besides possibly nothing, I think what we learned was if you can't tell who the celebrity foodie at your table is, it might be you. And then I think the other thing we learned is never, under any circumstances, watch reality television. Because one day it could lead to a very embarrassing misunderstanding. And then what else did we learn? Oh, if you see two people arguing about whether a tomato sauce should be called a sauce or a gravy, you just tell them there is no Italian word for gravy, except if it's a small gravy, then it's called a gravatini.
If you all have any comments for us, please reach out to us on Twitter or on Instagram at Chef John Pod, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
All right, say goodnight, Andrew.
Goodnight, Andrew.